It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. It is the ninth day of June 2022. And headon.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza. It is the horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you happen to listen to the podcast. Hi, I'm Robin, and I got a feeling we're going to be busy this evening. Of course, because this program is on the air in the 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time hour, that means that, the January 6th Commission hearings will premiere this evening in prime time. And hopefully they'll have fantastic ratings, because America needs to see exactly the level and degree of treason, insurrection, and perfidy of which Republicans are capable and in fact did perpetrate in the insurrection of January 6th, the weeks leading up to it, and even thereafter. So we'll run that audio live in the third hour, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and let me thank again Tracy for her happy birthday Little Lily challenge yesterday evening. It got us down to where our fundraising goal this evening is less than $1,000, which is a freaking miracle these days. Fundraising goal is $880. So thank you to everyone who participated in that. And thanks as well to our subscribers. Thank you to our PayPal subscribers for the ninth day of the month. That means thank you to Mary Bell, and thank you to James, and thank you to Ralphs, and thank you to Khalil. Thank you all so very much for being partial sponsors of the program. And we'll see what we can do this evening, because, like I said, we're trying to avert a real live, no kidding, absolute horrifying disaster in the offing, and if we can, we will. But we need to get a little more caught up. Basically, what we're talking about at this point in time is this is the first full week of June, and we had 880. That means we are today, yesterday, and $280 of Tuesday behind. So if we could catch up with Wednesday and Tuesday, that alone would be magnificent, okay? But like I said, if you want to be part of the Merry Madcap, et cetera, pop right by. You'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Theo and Stockton Larry and Squeaky and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. who, although a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space because it's 100 degrees there today in Northern California. I have no small amount of sympathy in that regard, because when it gets up around the 90s here in the studio, it gets pretty ugly. Right now, it's not terrible. It's a bearable 82 degrees, so we will cross our fingers. I want to get started with a little with a piece from Lady B. You know how much I appreciate and frankly adore her writing, even when it's painful, and I know y'all do as well. Lady B says, previously I wrote to you about Trump and the hearings starting today. Well, maybe I need to go back a little further. Trying to get to... Okay, and the question from the end of the program last night: Did anybody check that out? If you've got an iPhone or iTunes, Apple Radio, whatever, does it, when you ask it to play "Hey Jealousy" by the Gin Blossoms, does it play "Free Will" by Rush for you too? Because it does for me. It's just the damnedest thing. Let's see. I just want to make sure I get this in. Ah, there we go. Now, why did that happen? Give me a sec. No? Well, dadgummit. I'm trying really hard here, and I'm sorry I'm a little bit scattered. Scott in San Diego saying, tonight's big event. Yeah, I truly hope it will be, but it remains to be seen if this turns out to be must-see TV, or will living rooms across America echo with the familiar refrain, oh, this again. Hand me the remote, Gladys, and let's see what else is on. And so it goes. Or does it? There we are. There we are. So today's the big day. The one we progressives have been waiting for almost 2 years now, because this is the day Trump will be revealed to have actively been a part of a long-planned coup attempt against the United States government. I suppose we should all be surprised, shocked, and more importantly, outraged. Outraged that a man who didn't deserve to be president actually became president. He served one full term, only to be voted out in the next presidential election. The outrage comes in because after he finished his term, he should have left without fanfare and some dignity, knowing that despite not winning a second term, he, of all people, held the highest and most powerful job in the world. Like it or not, he's now a member of a very exclusive club. This dumb fuck not only exceeded his own expectations, but that of his father's. He failed upwards in the most spectacular of ways. Yet he's angry he didn't get a second chance at bat. That's like somehow winning the big stuffed animal at a rigged carnival game and being mad it isn't purple. You won, accept your prize, and Move the fuck on. I know Trump had his reasons for wanting to cling to his presidency. After all, you would too if being POTUS shielded you from any consequences, past or present. It was like getting the safe pass on Big Brother. Nothing can touch you as long as you hold that pass. However, once you lose it, you become just a regular roommate and face the danger of being evicted from the house. Trump was evicted from the White House by the electorate and the electoral and the popular vote. It really shouldn't have been a big deal. It's always been a temporary job, and we've had several one-term presidents. They may have hated losing their jobs, but they didn't try to overthrow the government to be placed back in power over it. They moved on, collected their checks, and the ones that are still fit play golf all day. So Trump had the pass for roughly 4 years, but during his time in the White House, he grifted his way through, didn't do his job, mishandled the COVID pandemic, and showed everyone he was never the right fit to begin with. Folks who didn't vote for either candidate realized their mistake in 2020 and corrected it. They had no idea that they had unwittingly put the devil in power, and the devil doesn't go away that easily. Trump is still trying his damnedest to cling to power. Those higher-ups supporting him also want to see him back in power because to them he was Midas. Everything he touched meant more gold for them, even if it turned to shit for the country. Trump made what they've been doing underground easier to do in the light of day. They didn't have to hide their racism and corruption anymore. Oh, the sweet, sweet freedom of duping the rubes, watching them hand over their money in complete approval. So this is the first day of congressional hearings regarding the January 6, 2021 insurrection in this round. They call it an insurrection, but it was more a coup based upon the actions of the FBI, who wanted to arrange an official motorcade for the ex-president to go back to the White House. Why would they want that? Especially after he asked his followers to march down there and disrupt the official count of the electoral votes. Why would any organization charged with the administration and integrity of the rule of law want to break or at least bend the law to accommodate someone who would not be their boss anymore in less than 2 weeks? Maybe the FBI was in on it, too. I don't doubt it. In fact, I think there was a lot of the executive, legislative, and judicial branch that were in on this. The J6 committee could only scratch the surface. The truth is far more ugly and dangerous. So this evening, we get to hear the results of an 18-month investigation into Trump's malfeasance. We'll get to hear testimony from those who participated in the coup attempt and those who were victims of it. We also get to see video created and directed by a former ABC executive producer just to make sure it has enough bells and whistles in it to grab our attention. Because that's what it takes to get and keep an American's attention, particularly in a world where we have a plethora of viewing and internet options. I don't know what the end result will be after all is said and done. The biggest fight is not going to be whether or not Americans will watch, because no matter how many car crashes and explosions you put in the video, some will watch and some won't. I mean, Fox News isn't even going to run it because nothing matters anymore. The biggest problem will be convincing those of us who do watch it that there is enough evidence to convict this man and his acolytes of sedition. That should be the only outcome of this trial. Otherwise, it's a waste of everyone's time, especially for the grandmas who have to miss their soaps. Either way, I'll be glued to it, but I'm a news junkie. I believe in the rule of law. I'd love to see Trump and his kids frog marched out of where they live, but I don't think it'll be that rewarding. But it'll be nice to have the truth out there in black and white. I'm sure it took Nixon's acolytes decades before they couldn't deny he was a crook. However, he had the decency to step down and admit defeat. Trump, on the other hand, needs a much harsher rebuke. He needs to be humiliated. He isn't capable of feeling that way, but he needs to be nonetheless. And if all we can get is for him to never be able to run for any office again, well, it'll help. We still have bigger fish to fry. We still have to figure out how to unite as a country. I hope to get a modicum of satisfaction from this, a quantum of solace. We desperately need it. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Indeed, indeed. And Lady B then continues and says, "Previously, I wrote to you about Trump and the hearing starting today. But one more thing about Uvalde. Actually, Uvalde should never become just one more thing. We American adults caused this. We deserve to hear about it again and again. We deserve to fucking suffer. But listening to Lawrence O'Donnell last night tell us a pediatrician said that two of the children were pulverized and decapitated in the gunfire, I can't help but focus on the word decapitated. The gunman blew two 10-year-old kids' heads off. They were fucking little kids, man. Kids! Yeah, I heard the testimony from yesterday's hearings. And I don't think that pediatrician's going to be okay for a very, very long time. It's easier to write this, Lady B says, than to say it in a steady voice. Because today we're going to watch and listen to hearings that hope to prove to our dumbass public that many prominent Republican leaders and many of their constituents attempted a coup. And our president at the time encouraged it. Mind you, these are the same sick bastards that refused to help pass stricter gun laws. Apparently, instead of giving them a chance at a meaningful job or free access to mental health care, it's easier just to watch 18-year-old disaffected white boys shoot up public schools. Well, I don't disagree with anything you said, Lady B, but let's be careful with that use of the word boys. In both Buffalo and Uvalde, those were white men. Men. You may rest assured that had the shooters been black, they would have been men all along. But, Lady B says, two children were decapitated. I'm sorry. Pulverized and decapitated. You know, another way to say that is that 18-year-old man Salvador Ramos blew their heads off in pieces. And those babies that survived the shooting have to live with this shit. They have to live with that visual forever. Fuck that noise, Robin. Fuck it. Dusting my hands. I'm done. I'm a grown-ass woman with PTSD. As a civilian, I can't even imagine this shit. I can't even imagine it. I don't doubt we'll see some suicides, both among the first responders, probably. Not amongst those sorry-ass Uvalde cops. And the children in the near future. And, you know, if there's nothing particularly big going on, hell, the for-profit media might even, who knows, report on it. Automatic and semi-automatic weapons are designed to kill people. Not even going to say animals anymore, because these weapons are designed specifically for combat. They're used during wars. Even then, it's a pretty sadistic way to die. In that instance, it's kind of by design. Two children were decapitated, pulverized. I'm going to say it again and again. They were decapitated and pulverized. Do you get that? As my mom would shake her head and say, Can you imagine that? How do you hold a fucking funeral knowing that what's inside the closed casket are the remains of a human that was supposed to fucking outlive you? Oh, my Christ. Lord, take my hand. Jesus, walk with me. Why, Robin? Why? I'll give you the easy answer, Lady B. Because in Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever in the universe under God, the paranoid fantasies of pasty-faced, doughy old white men whose manhood is long past its sell-by date is more important and the ability of a couple of little fourth graders to continue having their heads attached to their necks. That's why, Lady B, we can talk about mental health all day long, but the rates of behavioral difficulties and mental instability are roughly the same in all of the developed nations, give or take. But we're the country that has children decapitated and pulverized by weapons made for war. I've no doubt that children have died and died horribly in Ukraine. But that's a war. That is a real live, I don't care what Pooty Poot calls it, war that he started. And for which children and civilians pay. Automatic and semi-automatic weapons are designed for combat. They're used to kill human beings. That's it. You don't kill animals with them because they'd turn into a bloody pulp and attract vultures. Not be good for the freezer. People who do that should be fucking avoided and put on medication. You don't need an AK-47, an AR-15, or whatever letter you want to attach to that type of weapon. Spare me the stories about the origin of the names, or I swear I will fucking smack you. Wasn't gonna. Whatever they are, nobody needs to do that. Shotgun to kill critters if you must, but you don't need to use an assault weapon. Who fucking does that? 2 of 4 parents are living with the knowledge that their kids were decapitated and pulverized by an automatic weapon. An automatic weapon wielded by a kid who was barely an adult himself. That could have been one of the Horn family's kids or grandkids. Hell, that will be one of the Horn family's kids or grandkids, or even one of us if we don't demand our leaders pass legislation to get these weapons off the streets. Automatic and semi-automatic weapons are designed for use in combat. Automatic and semi-automatic weapons are designed for use in combat. Automatic and semi-automatic weapons are designed for use in combat. 2 children were decapitated. 2 children were pulverized. If y'all don't get that, go to hell. That's all I got. Signed, Lady B. And yes, the fact that the House late last night passed something. Nancy Pelosi's House of Representatives did their job. The Republicans almost uniformly said, well, hell no, I ain't got no freedom no more. So as Lady B points out, don't hold your breath. It's meaningless if the Senate won't pass it, and the Senate's not going to pass it. It's going to sit in that same pool of blood and dust on Moscow Mitch McConnell's desk. I wonder if he's got the picture of him grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush while standing in front of a Confederate battle flag. I wonder if that's back behind his desk. You know, kind of looking down on the pool of blood and dust. Lady B says it's infuriating that 50, no, make that 60 people hold our lives and our children's lives in their hands. 60 people who couldn't care less what happens to us as long as they keep their donors happy. The difference between living in a democratic republic versus living under authoritarian rule is that people who live under it know it. Many fight every day for equal rights. They have hope that someday they will emerge from this sham of an existence and enjoy the freedoms, scare quotes around freedoms, we Americans do. We live in an aristocracy, always have. But at least within the last 40 years or so, we saw poor blacks rise into the middle class. We had a black president who wasn't born rich. We knew whites enjoyed a higher economic status post-World War II, but some of us minorities were finally able to achieve that level. We thought we had a chance at a true egalitarian society. Now the ancestors of the people who kept minorities down... Well, ancestors? No. The progeny are successfully turning back the clock. Hell, they're working to put non-rich whites back in their place. Are we even capable of withstanding the pain it is to live under an aristocracy? Soft hands and soft asses. We as a country don't know true pain. We haven't had a real depression in almost 100 years, and European wars never touched our shores. Republicans are bringing the pain. I don't need any help to starve to death. Let's not go down without a fight. Amen, Lady B. A to the damn men. You know, every Thursday, I go over to Summersville. It's about a 25-mile drive. It's nice. It's all 4-lane. The speed trap starts inside the Summersville city limits. Goes from 65 to 50 like that. But I live here, and I know to just change the setting on the cruise control. And But every time I do go back for my shot, and then I come home, well, it's on the northbound side of U.S. 19 that historic marker is there. And I never see anybody there. I've stopped. But I never see anybody else stopping. Of course, the number of people who stop at historic markers, in, at least around here, is pretty rare. People don't come to my neck of the woods for the bloody history of the place. And bloody it is. They come here for the natural beauty. They come here to climb the rocks. They come here to hike the trails. They come here to raft the whitewater, hoping that it's marginally free of poison and coal filth. Whether it is or not, well, that's another matter. But when this kind of goes back to the Hornin, when Tara and I went to the Hawk's Nest Overlook on Friday, I pointed out to her Hawk's Nest Dam, because we had previously been down below the dam, and the water was up because they were releasing water for rafting purposes. People on the lower end rafted in things called creature craft. They are huge. I guess they're inflated. They're really, really tough. And they've got superstructures on them such that if they roll over, they pop back up. They're like a fucking weeble boat. Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. And I'm told it's a hell of a great ride. I think I would probably soil myself in the process, and, well, not something I enjoy. So we were there, and then we went up and we stopped at Hawk's Nest so that she could see what the gorge looks like from above. And I showed her Hawk's Nest Dam, and I've told the story of Hawk's Nest Dam a million times. It was built by Union Carbide, not by the state or by the United States. It was built by Union Carbide to provide hydroelectric power for their plant a little ways down the river at Alloy, West Virginia, where they were making things like silicon metal, which would later impact my father's life. But in order to create that hydroelectric power, they had to drill a giant tunnel all the way through the mountain. And the mountain was, you know, that wasn't a coal-bearing portion of the mountain. That was pure silica, sandstone. Sandstone dust that becomes like tiny pieces of jagged, broken glass in your lungs. And once enough of it is accumulated, because the lungs are a wet area, well, the tiny pieces of jagged, broken glass turn into concrete, and you stop breathing, and then you die. Now, something more than 500 people died drilling that tunnel, and the vast majority of them weren't white folks. One of these days, somebody should make a movie of that. But who's going to go to the theater to see something that horrifying? Young, strong, able, beautiful black men came from North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, Alabama, Mississippi. They left the farms, they left the towns, mostly they left the farms. Some of them left the mines. And they came here. Because that capitalist peon rang out. Jobs. Work. Good work. Good pay. And they lined up and they took jobs drilling that tunnel. They died like flies because they breathed their lungs full of that silica dust, and then it turned into concrete, and then they didn't breathe anymore, and when they didn't breathe anymore, they died. There's the little town at the foot of Gauley Mountain is called Gauley Bridge. It's the confluence of the Gauley River and the New River to form the Great Kanawha. And at one point in time during the drilling of that tunnel, Gauley Bridge was simply referred to as the Town of the Living Dead. When all those magnificently strong, able, capable young black men went there to die. And then, since nobody really knew where they were from, they took them away, a good bit away, and they buried them in mass graves, like, I don't know, victims of a war crime. No headstones, no names. And all there is in the off to the right of the northbound lane, or southbound lane, what am I saying? The southbound lane of U.S. 19, all there is a historical marker. It says mass grave, or maybe it says Hawk's Nest Tunnel Disaster. There's a historical marker at Hawk's Nest itself. Tara stopped to read it, and I said, you'll notice they don't mention the name of the company there. Because even mentioning it for the longest time was not done. Not good for capitalism. The dirty, bloody secrets of the ghosts of Appalachia. Well, the money wanted to keep them that. Secrets. But because I am a poet, and because I was trained and taught to think beyond and outside the bare and sterile facts, I wonder what those young men looked like. And they were young. And I wonder how many accents there were. Because, you know, Mississippi is not the same as Alabama, and Alabama is not the same as South Carolina. South Carolina is not the same as Virginia. And I wonder what their families thought when the postcards or the letters home stopped coming, or maybe even the paychecks. And there was nothing, really, nothing paid in the way of compensation. Hell, they didn't even get a Christian burial. And yet, we are talking in 2022 about jobs and productivity. And of course, if one of those young men came out of that hole coughing and wheezing and maybe coughing up blood and said, boss, I can't do it anymore. He said, well, get along now. Don't need you no more. There's somebody else waiting to have your job. You don't want to work, somebody else does. Foreman probably mumbled something about shiftless under his breath. But I do. I think about those men. 500. 500 is the conservative estimate. And I mention all of this because in the midst of everything else that everybody else is paying attention to, and I'm sure will be talked about ad infinitum on various and sundry progressive broadcasts over the course of the day and tomorrow, a little something happened in a subcommittee of the House Natural Resources Committee today. I'm sure no one watched it. I did. But then again, I'm no one. It was a subcommittee hearing on the impacts that the extraction of coal has had on this tormented part of the country. You know, one of the ironies is that we learned about silicosis from the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster in West Virginia. And for the most part, we learned about black lung, also known as coal workers' pneumoconiosis. God, hillbillies get to learn some big-ass words. We ought to be grateful, I reckon, for the education we receive. Well, West Virginia, working people in West Virginia taught us about that, too. And if silicosis turns to concrete in somebody's lungs, well, black lung, coal workers' pneumoconiosis, turns their lungs to ash. And I don't even know if we've got a reliable count. It would have to be well over 100,000 people dead in the last 100 years, men, of coal workers' pneumoconiosis or black lung. And then, of course, there's the long-term so-called environmental impact. Those are not just environmental impacts. Those are human rights impacts. Things that I've spent more time behind this microphone talking about than any other broadcaster on this planet or in the history of broadcasting. Yeah, that's me. And you know how hard it is for me to blow my own horn. Shut up. But it's fact. And so today I watched as Representative Matt Cartwright testified before the House, a subcommittee of the House Natural Resources Committee. The hearing was chaired by Representative Alan Lowenthal of, I think, the 47th District of California. He is, among other things, the congressman for Long Beach and Catalina Island. I'd love to see Catalina someday. There's a certain irony in the fact that California Democrats care more about West Virginia than West Virginia Democrats or West Virginia Republicans for the most part. Well, West Virginia Democrats for the most part and West Virginia Republicans in toto. But Representative Lowenthal chaired the committee hearing and Representative Cartwright testified about a fix to the abandoned mine lands fund. But then one of my heroes in the House, and more's the pity because he's retiring at the end of this term, John Yarmuth, who has from everything but the very beginning of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act, H.R. 2073, which I implore all of you almost every night to please call your member of the House of Representatives and beg them, or not, you know, we're done begging, tell them, look, this Congress is coming to a close. Get off your duff and co-sponsor this bill. But Representative Yarmuth testified and talked about the absolute necessity for the AHEC Act. Along the way, he said, you know, if I could craft a bill that would just end mountaintop removal tomorrow, that's what I'm in favor of. Me too. But he said, this humble bill simply seeks to have a federally funded, complete, thorough study of what this does to the health of people who live near mountaintop removal operations. And he's right. Now, at the end of that study, if we could ever pass this bill, there would have to be a certification by the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services that as to whether it was safe to continue doing this around human populations. I'm confident that the answer would be no, and if the answer is no, then mountaintop removal has to end forever and ever, amen. But he testified about its necessity. And so, like I said, while ever so many other and far more important things than hillbillies were taking place in Washington today, that little moment did happen, and it was historic in its own right. I think it was only the second hearing that's ever been had about mountaintop removal in the House. And so we will see if anything comes of it. Now, Doug Lamborn of Colorado, who is a vile and ugly maggoty piece of work, I'm sure he was among those who voted to protect AR-15s instead of children last night in the House of Representatives. He offered some smarmy words about his colleague, John Yarmuth, who was retiring, and then remained silent. But no, a little turd by the name of Tom Tiffany. And if you're from Wisconsin, you probably recognize his name. Well, he's a member of Congress, but back 8-10 years ago, he was a member of the legislature of the state of Wisconsin. And he took his time during the hearing because, of course, inveigh against these god-awful industrial installations for wind and solar. He said, oh, sure, you call them wind farms and you call them solar farms, but they're not farms. They're not growing anything. They're not feeding anything. Anybody? They are industrial, huge industrial installations. By God, to hear him tell it, you would have thought it was the goddamn tar sands in Alberta. But they're not. They don't have nearly the environmental impact of, say, a mountaintop removal operation or a coal prep plant replete with methyl cyclohexane methanol, MCHM. Smells like licorice, you know. They don't pose the risk of, say, a Keystone XL pipeline. And they don't pose the environmental damage of the tar sands of North Dakota either. No. But all of a sudden, Tom Tiffany was terribly, terribly concerned about the amount of arable farmland being ruined by these giant industrial wind and solar installations. I confess, I giggled a little bit when he said that, because I actually have a working memory of a time when he was still in the Wisconsin legislature, and he was roundly and soundly despised by my dear friends up in the north woods of Wisconsin and other parts of Wisconsin. Because, among other things, this guy who is, I guess, a new convert to Save American Farmland, back in the day, he was downright giddy, positively eager to gouge, blast, blow, and otherwise torment a hole a half mile deep, 2 miles wide, and 24 miles long through some of the most pristine countryside and pure waterlands of northern Wisconsin, known as the Pinocchi Hills. And, you know, it's been a long time since I've been there, and I keep promising myself that I'm going to go back. But somehow I don't. Keep talking about how I need to get away for a vacation, and I think about, oh, you know, I'd like to go to Rehoboth Beach, and no, can't go to Myrtle. Might get killed in South Carolina for being trans, and can't go to the Alabama Gulf Coast. That's gotten a little bit more dangerous, and maybe what I need to do is take a little time and just go up to the Northwoods. Some mighty good spiritual energy up there. But who am I kidding? There probably won't be any vacation. Because, in point of fact, I am the hardest working broadcaster doing this kind of work. I'm right here probably more days out of any given year than anybody else doing this job. And I like that. Because as much as I say, you know, I need a vacation, when I take a vacation, you know what I do? I think about all the shit I'm not talking about every night. So there's that. But, yeah, I heard Tom Tiffany talking about the poor abused farmland abused by these wind industrial and solar. And I'm like, oh, shut up. Because the bottom line is, he doesn't give a good goddamn about farmland. He would gladly frack the fuck out of it. Use every drop of potable water to pump down into these nightmare wells. Roast the planet to a goddamn cinder for a buck. Because just as was the case with the giant tunnel drilled through Gauley Mountain, it's all about money. And it's all about the siren song sung from corporate boardrooms all over America of jobs and work. That sacred word for people who aren't gazillionaires. You know, the character Joe Kinahan in the movie Mate One says, you know, I always figured there was two kinds of people in this world. Them that work and them that don't. You work, the bosses don't. And oddly enough, the nastier the job, the more they'll pay for it. In any given year, there will be a report that comes out that talks about the most lucrative jobs in Merca. And without fail, it's all oil field, gas field, technical engineering jobs related to that sort of work. Offshore oil platforms and the like. Because you have to pay a lot of money, relatively speaking, to get people to compartmentalize their consciences. Sometimes it's a little frustrating. I was watching the hearing today, and one of these assholes asked Republicans, asked one of the witnesses, now, little lady, you mentioned a just economy in your remarks. Just exactly what does that mean? And I gotta admit, she gave this kind of wishy-washy answer. And it just, well, it... You know, if somebody's starving to death and you hand them a stick of cotton candy, it's not exactly going to fill them up, but because cotton candy turns out not to be anything. It turns out to be nothing. And so she said, well, instead of giving you a definition, Your Eminence, I'm just going to say that what a just economy looks like is what any given affected community feels like it looks like. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. You know what a just economy looks like? I'll tell you. A just economy is an economy that does not require the lives of the people who work near whatever is being produced to be sacrificed in order to enrich some goddamn bespoke suited son of a bitch sitting in a boardroom 1,000 miles away. But, of course, she didn't really, you know, it might not be good for her continued employment if she spoke that much truth to that much power. And that's why I wasn't testifying today. Not that I was asked. But it is a problem, this inability to call something what it actually is. To say that poisoning and killing people for profit is unjust, that there is nothing in it that participates or partakes of justice. But, you know, here we are. Scott asks, do you remember Rock'em Sock'em Robots? Oh, I do. Imagine a boxing ring toy with plastic ropes. On opposite sides, a pair of thumb-operated plungers that operated a pair of plastic robots in the squared circle. One Republican red, the other Democrat blue. At the sound of the bell, we'd work those thumb plungers for all we were worth, rockin' and suckin' for all we were worth. Ultimately, one of us would suck the other robot just right with a toy, and with a toy gear roar, the other kid's robot's head would fly up off its red or blue robot shoulders. Then, flush with kid victory, you'd press the sprung head back into its place for an exciting rematch. And now, back to the present. It may well turn out to be a little more than a big kid's version of a meaningless child's toy. Yeah.
It's reporting around a million people.
That's an ad. Let's go to the ad, yeah.
Sure, but you can press it right back on again. It's just part of the action with the world's only boxing robots, the Rock'em Sock'em Robots by Marks. Takes two managers to handle the fighters and lots of skill to win. With these control levers, you can keep your fighters in motion to duck punches. When you press this plunger, he throws a right uppercut. Press the other plunger and there's a left jab. Lots of exciting action and fun for everyone when the world's only boxing robots battle it out.
The Blue Bomber's looking for an opening! And there it is! That's the end of round two!
Just push the flying head back and you're ready for round three!
Boy, this is the greatest!
You bet! The world's only boxing robots! Get the Rock'em Sock'em Robots by Mark!
And that and some members of that generation grew up to become Republican legislators who... Well, I guess they think that you can just pick up the pieces of a child's skull and stick them back on the neck, and you're ready for round two! Where's the next angry, young, radicalized, extremized, weaponized white young man with an AR-15? Step right up. Step right up. Oh, and by the way, going back to the Apple radio question, Earther says, when I ask Siri to play that, my wife yells back, hey, I'm trying to watch the TV. Who am I kidding? I don't have a wife or a girlfriend. Makes two of us. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, however. And I ran across this last night after the program. And it was it just screamed to be somewhere in the first hour of this evening. It comes from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, of course, and their program The Five. Is that somebody from Southern California? Did somebody from Southern California name that after their favorite freeway or something? Actually, David in San Diego, we got to talking about that during the Horn-In, and he dug around and found out why Californians put the in front of highways. And I know the answer now. But it all had to do with the story we talked about in yesterday's program of 26-year-old Nicholas Roski of Simi Valley, California. And the fact that he's from California is probably enough to... get various and sundry members of the Confederate States to maybe want to declare war on California, as much as back during the abolition debate prior to the Civil War. Newspapers in the South suggested, at least one did, that the best solution to the abolition problem was to, and I'm not kidding, dig a big ditch around Massachusetts and float it out to sea. Well, now they'd probably just, and gun laws being gun laws, maybe they already are attacking California. But anyway, Nicholas Roski, you know, called 911 and said, you know, I really want to shoot a Supreme Court justice. And they sent the cops, and the cops came and arrested him and took him away. And at no point in time was precious, precious, precious Brett Kavanaugh and his precious, precious, precious family ever, ever for an instant in jeopardy. Because Nicholas Roski never took any actual action. But unlike ever so many of the people who engaged in an insurrection against constitutional governance in the capital of the United States of America and will never see the inside of a jail, or if they do see the inside of a jail, won't see it for very damn long, Nicholas Roski will probably be charged with attempted murder of a Supreme Court justice and face 20 years in the slammer for it. And damned well likely get it. Well, they discussed all this on The Five. I'm not going to subject you to the audio. But they brought on that idiot who used to work for he was the paid stalker for Bill Falafel O'Reilly, the guy who got all whacked out of his mind on, I guess, Cheap Chablis, and called up one of his producers, a woman, and told her how he'd like to get into the shower with her and rub her down with a falafel. Yeah, that Bill O'Reilly. Well, Jesse Waters was his stalker, and they've given Jesse Waters his own show, and he shows up on things like The Five. It's sort of a toxic version of Super Friends, where weirdos from other Fox shows show up on that show, and they bark and grunt and hoot a lot. And so, in that particular episode, Jesse Waters declared, and I'm not kidding, that the majority leader of the Senate of the United States, Charles Schumer, should be, and those of us who know our civics, which is, of course, the entire Greater Horn Community Family Congregation, this will be very hilarious to you. We could probably do without the very. I edit on the fly, even when I'm talking. But Jesse Waters said that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer should be impeached because a disturbed young man went sort of vaguely into the neighborhood where the general vicinity of where Brett Kavanaugh lives in a house that was paid for, and we still don't know who did. But Jesse Waters said that so from what Schumer said and from what Psaki didn't say, by giving it license to show up at the homes, by his inaction, the Attorney General and Ruth Sent Us group that still tonight published the address of Kavanaugh online, there needs to be investigation. We need to connect the dots. We need to follow the money. And we need to subpoena everybody and find out exactly what they really believe under oath. And went on to suggest that, a man who cannot be impeached within the meaning of the Constitution of the United States should be impeached. See, it doesn't matter if you don't know beans when the bag's open about civics or American governance. All you have to do is get on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. They turn the little red light on the camera, and you start babbling ignorant, barely sane, semi-coherent garbage. And all the people who watch Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, nod their bobbleheads on their little spring-loaded necks. Yeah, that's right. That's right, Morvaline. We need to impeach Chuck Schumer. You know, he's a communist. And this is why America is so fucked up. Yeah? Yeah. Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. Chuck Schumer should be impeached. There is no provision in the Constitution for impeaching a member of the United States Senate. At all. Period. Not in the least. But it doesn't matter, because it's Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and facts, law, any of that don't matter. Witness, for instance, Matt, it just gets worse. Kind of wondering when somebody will indict his ass. During the debate on the weak bill that was passed in the House, passed something, and will now die in a pool of blood and dust on Mitch McConnell's desk. Well, Matt Gaetz, speaking about AR-15s, well, hit the hockey puck.
First, Nancy Pelosi goes out and calls every member of the Republican Party the member of a cult. Then they get their woke mob all riled up and gaslit by refusing to condemn what I consider to be the advance team for the more serious attempts at violence. The people who went outside and protested outside of the homes of these justices against express provisions in federal criminal law, and there was no consequence for that, so they took it a step further. So this is a system where they've opened the borders, where they've abolished police or neutered them to the point where they're no longer sufficiently responsive. They're disarming Americans.
Wait. It's Nancy Pelosi's fault that a bunch of gunned up chicken shit dumbasses didn't do anything while children were slaughtered in Uvalde? Did I get that? Well, of course. Sure. And he's speaking, by the way, on what's called The War Room on Real America's Voice.
And then that they're trying to do is justify violence against people they don't agree with. And that is what is happening in the lead up to these midterms. You see all these stories now that the mainstream media is starting to leak, and these threat assessments coming from the FBI that there could be midterm violence. Well, that violence is coming from their side, and they're purposefully trying to disarm us by passing red flag laws and by assuring that young adults cannot access various types of firearms, because they want us to be in the most vulnerable position when they create these false flag acts of violence, and then the counter-violence that could come against our people. I take no pleasure in any of this. I do not believe politics is a place for violence. But I do see these varying points coming together, and I do believe the extremism legislation, the gun control, and the gaslighting are all very connected.
Right, because the violence, despite every piece of empirical data that we've had in the last 8 to 10 years, the political violence in the United States is coming from the left. And I guess Nancy Pelosi is going to impose martial, or maybe the gazpacho police are going to come. And if young adults can't buy, and he's talking about someone 18, 19, or 20, if young adults can't buy AR-15s, which they then go on to use to shoot up schools, False flag. Where's my bottle of rock cut tequila? Nowhere to be found. No. That violence is coming from their side, and they're trying to disarm us by passing. When he says they're purposefully trying to disarm us by passing red flag laws, isn't Matt Gaetz, I mean, and given that red flag laws are meant to stop people who are looking not screwed down real tight from being able to purchase weapons of war, who have actually provided evidence that they probably shouldn't have one by, I don't know, harassing young women online, posting creepy shit about the places they want to shoot up online. Yeah. I think Matt Gaetz is kind of admitting he's an incel. Or that he's someone that red flag laws would apply to. And in light of the fact that he was eager to have sex and paid for sex with an underage young woman, well, that might be a red flag. Just a little bit. And, of course, when these things get going, they get legs. Back over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Again, Jesse Waters asserting that Joe Biden and other Democrats probably made this could be a little criminal conspiracy. Did the orders come from all the way at the top? Nicholas Roski again of Simi Valley, California. And he went on that way for 7 long minutes. How many of the 7 minutes do you think we can abide? Maybe none.
Our president famously said, "I'm not a mind reader. I can't predict what will happen and what people will do." Well, Mr. President, you don't have to be a mind reader to predict what happened today. When a left-wing lunatic flew across the country to try to assassinate Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
And he got to D.C. and he said, "Boy, are my arms tired, this left-wing lunatic from the flapping."
But was he just following orders? Remember what Chuck Schumer said.
I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you.
Was that incitement, Chuck?
Yeah,
Supreme
no.
Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. But was he just following orders?
No. Yep, that's as much of that as I can stand. Thanks. Jesus. There was, and you know, I usually don't run these sort of long package kind of things, but they did a really good job at CNN. Some of this is visual, but they did a really good job today. They went out and did some actual homework on the relative differences between something resembling human flesh being hit by a round from a pistol at about 1,000 feet per second. That's roughly a 9mm round. And what happens when it's a round from an AR-15? This is actually worth the few minutes that it takes.
They are known as assault-style weapons and have been used in some of the country's deadliest shootings. From Uvalde, Tulsa, and El Paso to Parkland, San Bernardino, and Sandy Hook, the high-powered assault rifle has been the weapon of choice for many of the killers.
Line is hot.
The Los Angeles Police Department demonstrates an AR-style semi-automatic rifle for us
young
on the department's gun range.
You have a 16-inch to 20-inch barrel. You have a stock that is shouldered. You're going to be accurate at farther distances as opposed to a pistol.
Not to mention, like some other weapons, it can fire a bullet with enough power to pierce soft body armor, something Sergeant James Zaborovan knows firsthand.
Oh, jeez. It's definitely an automatic weapon.
He took assault weapons fire during the now infamous 1997 North Hollywood shootout, where two bank robbers wearing body armor fired on police for nearly an hour, injuring eight people and 12 officers, including Sergeant Zaborovan.
You're being hit with pieces of the vehicles we were hiding behind, asphalt, radiator fluid. Felt like we were being stung by bees.
That shooting changed policy, prompting the LAPD and other departments to upgrade their own weaponry to counter the increasingly powerful guns used by assailants. That firepower from weapons is studied inside a ballistics lab at Wayne State University, where researchers simulate a bullet's impact on the human body.
It's a block of 20% gelatin, and it's meant to represent the human tissues, so soft tissues.
Watch as Cynthia Burr's team fires a handgun round at 1,000 feet per second into the gelatin block.
Well,
for this particular
watch.
Round, you'll see the bullet come in on this side. You see this temporary cavity here happening. So that expansion is what happens in the body, and then it collapses down. So that's where your damage comes in.
Now watch as the team fires a round from an assault rifle.
We see a lot more disruption. This round actually breaks apart. It doesn't exit, so it's about 3,000 feet per second, and all of that energy goes into the soft tissue. We have a piece of plastic here to reflect to do the videos, and it actually lifted the plastic up off the table with the energy.
An aftermath photo of the handgun round shows a relatively straight line through the tissue, exiting the other side. But not so with a round from an AR-15.
It basically goes into the body and creates an explosion inside the body.
Trauma surgeons say the wound from an assault rifle can be catastrophic.
And the worst part is in a child, all the vital organs are that much closer together. So each of those bullets causes, you know, irreversible damage.
In Uvalde, Texas, families were asked for DNA swabs to help the authorities identify their children.
As a mom, it really affects me, right? Because I cannot imagine having a child endure this.
And with high-capacity magazines, suspects can shoot for much longer.
But see, that academic said, as a mom, I can't imagine having to do that. You got to get inside the mind of a Republican, though. As a Republican, they can't, you know, Republican women, Republican men, they can't imagine a world without ordinary citizens being able to purchase these weapons that can do that to a child. And that's really the fundamental difference, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, it is. I don't know what I was thinking. I said that we'd be listening to this program will go off at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's when the hearing starts. Sorry about that. But imagine, if you can, try to it'll make you feel real ooky, and like get a popsicle or something, or maybe a bowl of ice cream after, just to make you feel a little better. Try to imagine being the kind of horrible human being who's more worried about civilian access to AR-15s than whether a child can just go to school and come home the same day. I sympathize with, empathize with, and I pity every parent of every school child in this country now. I don't think I would be okay. And again, to go back to what I was talking about earlier at the beginning of the program, I remember when Upper Big Branch blew up over a decade ago now. And CNN stuck a microphone in some newly minted widow's face and said, and she was in shock. She said, well, they asked her how she felt about the fact that her husband had been incinerated past recognition as a former member of the human race. And she said, well, we always knowed it was a dangerous job. And for a century and a quarter or more in this part of the country, wives got up, maybe even before their husbands, probably before their husbands, certainly before their husbands, and got busy cooking the morning's breakfast and fixing her husband's lunch for the dinner bucket. Maybe kissing him at the door and looking at his back as he walked away and knowing there was a chance far better than zero that view of his back was the last sight she would ever have of him alive on this planet. And because the coal company houses were clustered around the mines themselves, or within close proximity, when the mine blew up, everybody felt the walls rattle and the floors shake. Sometimes the windows broke. And everybody could hear the loud, loud whistle when it blew, letting people know that there had been a disaster inside the mine, that capitalism had worked its magic again. And the wives would drop what they were doing and go at a dead run to the mine. Terrified, hoping against hope, and yet feeling at the same time horrified that everyone would emerge from the mine alive, knowing it was almost impossible that that would be the case. And then hoping that, well, that it wasn't her man. And yet at the same time feeling a sick feeling in the pit of her gut, realizing that she had just thought that she had inadvertently hoped that it was some other. And knowing also that her life was essentially over and the lives of her children were essentially over if her man was dead in the mines. Because that would mean that there was absolutely nothing for her or for them. The mine blew up at Monongah in 1907. 300 men and boys blown to pieces. And after a couple of weeks, it was coming on toward Christmas, the coal company scrounged around and found a couple of $100 for every widow. One coal company executive said, "Well, that ought to make for a pretty merry Christmas for them." I mentioned all of this. I tell all of this not as some way of reinforcing the horrors of what Appalachia is, but to say that maybe, well, not maybe, but that in a way, those horrors have expanded across the country. I know women who told me the stories of what it felt like to watch their man go away and wondering if it was the last they'd ever... Because, see, they'd come home and they'd tell their wives how goddamn dangerous it was down there and how the company didn't give a good goddamn. That all that mattered was the tons of coal coming out of there. I know these stories. Now imagine that the person whose back she's looking at is a third her height. And it's her baby. And her baby is going to the bus stop to get on the bus to go to school. And on any given goddamn day in America, she doesn't know. She does not know for certain. Or even within the 90% range, she does not know if she will ever see the child that she bore alive again. So it was for 19 sets of parents in Uvalde, Texas. So it was for the parents at Sandy Hook. All the way back to the mid-90s, so it was for the parents in Colorado. And at how many other schools and it's become our normal. That is the sick thing about all of this. It has become our normal. And we are engaged in a feedback loop of learned helplessness. Every time one of these things happens, and every time I open the microphone and say, "Don't worry, nothing's going to happen," I'm part of that, and it makes me sick. And it's not limited to any particular state in the union, although it happens a little bit less in states that have something resembling humane laws relating to the sale and ownership of these weapons of war. I've gotten to the point where I feel like they just need to be banned. And once they're banned, if you're caught with one, up the river, baby. Freedom will not suffer. The gun industry profits will probably fall a little bit, and CEOs of gun companies might feel something akin, distantly akin, like Pluto is kin to Earth, to suffering. But they won't be pulverized. Their heads will not be separated from their bodies. They will, in fact, live. And hell, if they're that upset about it, they can go to Somalia or Haiti or Yemen. I'm sure I'm being irrational. Hysterical woman, right? Oh, no worries, Lady B. No worries. Thank you for editing my writing on the fly. My Kindle said acolytes was a misspelling. Fuck Jeff Bezos. And yes, not all white people inherited their ancestors' racism. Thank you for being among the most decent of God's children. Thank you, Lady B. I'm not nearly that decent, but thank you for thinking I am. Also, you promised not to sing. Stick to it. You'll go places. And yes, you're somebody. Say it loud. Mostly I just feel like nobody from nowhere. Say it loud. I'm a pasty-skinned trans woman and I'm proud. That part I will say. I'm a pasty-skinned trans woman and I'm proud. Although I'm not nearly... After the weekend's time spent cooking... prior to the horn-in... I actually darkened up a little bit. At least on my... arms and shoulders. Peeling now. But maybe I won't be quite so pale. But that certainly doesn't account for the rest of me. You know, when I go outside like at night to put a little extra ice in my water bottle or something, I don't even have to take a light with me. I light my own way with my paleness. Oh, but last night was beautiful. There was the thunderstorm moving in. It hadn't gotten to us yet. I could feel the cool breeze. It was lovely. And I walked out to the cooler to get some ice from a bottle. And every now and then, the lightning was so far distant that there was no thunder to be heard accompanying it. But the lightning would flash and the sky turned absolutely purple. Beautiful purple. And after the lightning, it would seem that the fireflies in the trees around me, and there were lots of them, probably hundreds if not thousands, would light up madly, and I wondered if they were communicating something besides "what the fuck," you know, in lightning bug, because they absolutely would have after the lightning, they would have as if they were answering the lightning. It was like strobe lights on nature's dance floor. And I just stood. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. It was beautiful. I looked up in the wild cherry tree on the property line, and it's probably 50 feet tall now. Didn't used to be. I've watched it grow over the last 22 years. I mean, didn't actually see it grow, but it's pretty obvious it did. And there were fireflies in the very topmost parts of those trees. And it was a little like magic. It's beautiful. Well, enough of that. I'm waxing philosophic. We got an $880 fundraising goal. That $880 fundraising goal is the difference between this program continuing and not. Not kidding. We took a bite out of it last night, but we're not there yet. I wish I could say that this was something relating to my desperate need for a vacation, but it isn't. It's relating to my desperate need to keep the bills paid here. Energy prices have gone up, everything else has gone up, and it's getting a little scary, and I know that's affecting y'all too. But it is existential to the continued existence of this program, so if we can knock it down, that would be fan-freaking-tastic. And thus far, we are at something commonly referred to as goose egg. Lady B. Oh, tell Tracy, we got a budding sister girl here. Nah, still too pasty. Sweet days of summer, the jasmine's in bloom. It is. The honeysuckle here. Smelled it last week for the first time, and it was, oh my God, it's the honeysuckle. Won't last too long, but Lord, it's sweet while it does. Okay, let's run over to the stress line. Dave has been waiting patiently, I think. Is that you, Dave?
Yeah, Robin, it's me.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Congratulations to Lily on her safe arrival. I'm glad to see she got her bag from that. And to that end, I want to bring back an ancient horn tradition of the match-a-lanch. I will raise my Patreon to $30 from 20 to 30 if we can get two $10 subscriptions of any kind. And my Patreon will be my regular payment. I've done my figures. Everything's good. But if we can get two $10 subscriptions, either Patreon or PayPal, since we've got her by the end of the program on Monday, I will raise my Patreon subscription to $30 and thereby help everybody get things going. I know things are tough. I know, but, you know, Robin, you do this for all of us and have been doing it for nearly 20 years. And first of all, you know, with everything going on in your life and you're keeping all those plates spinning, it's amazing. Now let's get to the fun part of the program.
Do tell.
I woke up kind of late, tuned in, and I heard that Matt Gaetz is an incel. No, no, he's a Venmo. That's the problem.
Okay, okay, that's quality. Not all Venmos are incels, but some incels are Venmos.
Yes, that's true. He's a Venmo. And I am going to be listening with bated breath during these hearings because I've known from the beginning that the Select Committee has known more about what went on leading up to, during, and after the insurrection uprising on the 6th of January, 2000. I was reading where several of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers have
been indicted.
Pleaded guilty.
Well, pleaded guilty, been indicted.
No. Yeah, some of them have pleaded guilty to, and I don't know why they lowered the to felony charges, but they just arrested the Republican Michigan governor candidate for four misdemeanor counts due to his alleged participation in the violence at the U.S. Capitol, which is immediately going to cause the right wing to go, it's all political. Well, they were going to say it to begin with, so just get used to it, folks. I was thinking while you were talking about, you know, the mine disasters and having talked to women who lived through that, and I was thinking, it's amazing to me that a pro-union state like West Virginia used to be.
I was about to say, used to be.
Yeah, it used to be, can get turned into such a pig fucking unions ain't nothing but tyranny kind of bullshit, because I grew up in a union household. My dad was a member of the Communication Workers of America as a cable splicer. And later, when he worked in Alaska, he was a member of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, for those of you following at home. And my own father, he doesn't say it nearly as loud as some of the maggots, but he'll start bitching and complaining about unions until I look at him and say, Dad, you wouldn't have been able to raise three kids had you not been union. I mean, my dad, 30 years ago, Robin, my dad was making $18 an hour.
Good money 30 years ago.
And to this day, we're still fighting to try to get the minimum to 15. There is something desperately wrong here, Robin.
Well, it depends on who you ask, because if you ask if you ask Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or the CEO of any American corporation or almost any American corporation, they'll tell you that that's what's right with America. Milton Friedman, whose dead hand still is wrapped around the throat of the American working population, said that one of the most critical aspects of maintaining growth and profit was to keep the workforce in a constant state of terror. Well, you can't do that with a bunch of people being able to sock money away for rainy days and things like that.
Or to send their kids to college or anything like that. Yeah. I you know, my sister and brother-in-law, my sister's a union teacher. She's, as a matter of fact, she's a shop steward. And she was telling me that her principal was requiring some of the teachers to work off hours without pay, mandating it. And she mentioned this in a meeting, a teacher's meeting, and my sister spoke up and said, no, that would be a violation of the contract. And my sister looked over at the principal and said, you will not require them to do this without being paid. And this was a younger teacher that she was targeting, you know. And my sister, they've been wanting to get rid of her for a while. She's the second highest paid teacher in her school system. And she, but she's been doing it for 30 years, Robin.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she knows her contracts. She's been active with the American Federation of Teachers for a while, and she, I've seen her in action with her, with her, representing her teachers, you know. And her fellow colleagues, especially the younger teachers who haven't been around nearly as long as she has. Some of who grouse about being members of the union and all that. And it amazes me that when you talk about work safety, or you talk about pay equity, or you talk about just being treated like a decent fucking human being, unions have to be the counterpoint to management.
Now, well, otherwise there is no counterpoint. An individual worker cannot be a counterpoint to the vast power of ownership and management.
But if you get a couple hundred or a couple thousand, well, that could be quite a counterpoint. You know, my mom's dad was a shop steward for the United Auto Workers. My dad's father was a professional musician and was a member of the Musicians Union, Local 3, here in Indianapolis. And to hear my dad bad-mouthing unions just makes me want to grab him by the throat and go, what the fuck are you talking about? I mean, he acts like he did it all on his own. And when you point out to him that, no, you didn't, he gets really angry. And when you were talking about the effects of an AR-15 round on a child's body, that alone should ban those weapons.
If you could show the effects of an AR-15 round on a fetus, or rather, you know, let's bear in mind that Republicans, Dave, now consider that life begins at conception. So you're talking about one egg and one sperm, and that, of course, is extremely microscopic. But if you could show the effect of an AR-15 round on that, maybe you might get a little itty-bitty, teensy-tiny bit of buy-in from the Republicans. But
well, now,
post-born children, fur fucking get it.
Well, Robin, I have the answer to that. What we at Crazy Days have been thinking is
nothing good comes when the brain trust gets going at Crazy Days Crucifixion Emporium.
Well, we were thinking of setting up our own range. You know, we have, since we have variable heights of crosses, we can adjust it so that how should we put it? Demonstration dummy. Yeah, that's exactly how we'll put it. It is placed at such a spot that their genitalia is right in the middle of the target zone. And then when them sharpshooting gun bunnies decide they want to start shooting off, we hand them an AR-15, and then we show them exactly what it does to their private part. I guarantee you there will be some changes in the law shortly thereafter, because now it's an actual threat. It's not just movie yahoo. I mean, this guy in Texas, in the Uvalde shooter,
right,
shot his grandmother, and then
in
went
the
off
face.
In the face, and I hope to God she's doing better, because nobody deserves that kind of shit. You know, and it's been coming out that what was grandma doing? Trying to protect herself legally, to protect her property by evicting his mama from a house. And if that's how we're going to answer these questions, Robin, of housing and all of that, is by shooting us up some more people, well, then what the hell am I doing in this country? And this is my country as well. Just because you want to wave the flag and say, I got my AR-15, I'll tell you what to think. Because that's exactly what they're doing. Wayne the Peter and the rest of them, they're counting all the way to the goddamn bank. They could give a flying shit about any other human being. After all, we have our problems are so profound, Robin, that we don't have, we must solve the homeless firearm problem. And I've come to the conclusion that while we're setting up the range at Crazy Days, that we also set up our self-serve armory.
NRA don't want nothing being stored.
No, hear me out, Robin. You've seen those U-Store places where you go in and you put your apartment's worth of goods into these little garages. Well, the same sort of thing happens here, because the United States, if it's good enough for the United States military, by God, then it's good enough for us at Crazy Days. We set up a high security area where you have to sign in and sign out, come get your freedom protector. And if you feel like strapping the hog leg on to go to the Walmart, you go in, you sign it out, and then it is known that you are carrying. So if you get into a shooting up at the Wally World, well, then the police can just get out the Crazy Days, where a friendly representative will get our sign out sheet and go, yeah, well, he was here. And he went to locker 532, and that held a 45 automatic. He also signed out a box of rounds. So you know, the cops will know that no children will have been getting a hold of them, because, you know, we're not going to let some 8-year-old come into the armory. No, son, you're too young to own one of these things, let alone sign one out. You know, we just won't do it.
Yeah, see, that's way too rational for all the gun humpers. And by the way, Ralph's just chimed in and said, "Oh, crazy Dave, gack!" When you got around to talking about shooting the testicles and whatnot. Gack!
Well, no. I'm asking you, Robin, don't you think some laws would change if you could show the effects of that, since
we keep talking about, but I don't think so. These are people like unto Pharaoh of old, whose hearts have been hardened.
Well, then I think we ought to go full on Moses on their ass.
Well, the thing is, these Republicans are already creating a river of blood on their own. No Yahweh necessary.
That's fine.
Check dealer for details. Your mileage may vary.
That's fine. I said we get a bunch of liberal engineers out there to build copper dams across Lake Michigan. We lead a bunch of these Michigan militia fucks into the middle of the lake, and then we just break the copper dam. And they get washed away just like Pharaoh's army of old. There. I can get just as biblical as they can.
It probably more so. We're better at it. Although speaking of biblical, I got something for you here. You'll get a kick out of this. Ted Lieu, who is a damn fine congressman from California.
Yeah.
This being Pride Month and everything, and what with Republicans just losing their shit, as they always do every Pride Month. They'd been barking and grunting, the Republicans had, about, you know, the gays and particularly the trans. And Ted Lieu got a moment to speak. I think you'll like this.
In March of this year, the Washington Post published an article titled, "GOP Lawmakers Push Historic Wave of Bills Targeting Rights of LGBTQ Teens, Children, and Their Families." In April, Washington Post published another article titled, "Some Republicans Fear Party Overreach on LGBT Measures." I just thought I would now recite for you what Jesus Christ said about homosexuality. I yield back.
You get it?
You're perfect. He's a picket. Yep. I get it. But, you know, they project onto their version of the divine whatever they want. I mean, let's look at, since you and Tracy were talking about Greek mythology, I always found it interesting that the Greek gods were an awful lot like the people.
Yeah, kind of right.
You know, they had all the squabbles and all the bullshit and all the
look what the story says was the actual beginning of the Trojan War. I mean, sure.
The beauty pageant?
The beauty pageant, yes. Of course, blame the women.
Yes.
And what was it? Athena was one of them, and
Venus.
Well, that's the Roman, but yeah, Aphrodite.
Or Aphrodite, yeah, Aphrodite.
And of course,
and Juno. I believe Juno was the third.
Hera, yes.
Hera.
And then, of course, the dark horse, Helen, won. And her prize was a golden apple. And I'm fond of the Golden Delicious, too, myself, I must admit.
They're very sweet.
Great with peanut butter. I like peanut butter and apples. I'm just weird that way. Get that wonderful fruity sweetness in the peanut butter. And really, really, it's a great snack. But she won a golden apple, and the next thing you know, Paris is deciding to romp with her in the house of her husband, and then they run away to Troy, and, you know, shit's on.
Agamemnon uses an excuse to grab more land. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're terribly human. In the literal sense of the word, terrible.
The Christians are doing the same thing. Although those who call themselves Christians often don't reflect too much of the Christ, as has been pointed out by people like Gandhi. But, you know, when you can boil down the Gospels to the simple line of don't be a dick, that's going to put an awful lot of preachers out of business awful quick. You mean it's that damn simple? Well, yeah, but we got all this other stuff over here. You got to come to see us on Sunday to find out all about. You know, that hustle's been going on for a while.
Kinda, yeah. Pretty much. Well, hey, I've got some thank yous to send out. Thank you very kindly to Mary Bell. Mary Bell just jumped in and took us down by a good solid little lick. Thank you, Mary Bell. That gets us down to $7.99. Thank you. Mary Bell says, you know, if Trump wants another civil war, I think the weapons of choice should be bone spurs. And that's a cowbell for Mary Bell. Bone spurs at 20 paces. Thank you, Mary Bell, and thank you. Well, this has never happened before. Yeah, but thank you to Terry in Iowa. Thank you. That gets us down to 7:24. Thank you to Arthur, who gets us down to 716.50. Oh, God, loose change. But 716.50. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And by the way, I had a note from Darlene a little bit ago when I was talking about capitalism. Or maybe Darlene in Connecticut says, you tell us these stories so that Democrats like Elizabeth Warren and President Joe Biden can think twice before proudly trumpeting that they're capitalists. I'm a capitalist, they clarify. And so that we can bear witness when not a goddamn thing happens to Mr. Pelosi for his drunken driving crime in his Porsche. Private matter, Nancy quips. Okay, but you and I couldn't post that 5K bail to get out of the hoosegow like he did. It's just pocket change to them. Damn, there's lots of benefits to being a capitalist and in power. They still ain't you and me as much as they want us to think so. No, there's them that works and them that don't. You know, it's different around here. We used to have one guy who drove Uber over in Fayetteville. I won't give his name. We all knew him, though. I mean, and get it. So, you know, if you're out and you have too much at, one of the local watering holes, eh, you're kind of in a bind.
But the thing,
you know, because you can't really call an Uber or a Lyft or a left or a right or, you know, whatever. But if you live in a civilized place, we'll call it, like Mr. Pelosi does, you can call that Uber. And I'll bet you Nancy gave him Hail Columbia for it. Never mind the $5,000 bail. He got his ass chewed by Nancy Pelosi. And you can ask any member of the House of Representatives how much fun that is. I'm making somewhat light, but it's a judgment thing. It doesn't come with the sort of, well, I remember years ago before Uber and Lyft came along, some comedian, maybe it was Sam Kennison, said, of course we're going to drink and drive. How the hell are we going to get our car home? And there was a perverse sort of logic to that.
As all good comedy has.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was not kicking down comedy, which apparently is the thing of the modern era. It was just a humorous observation. But yeah, that is bothersome. That is. Of course, did he have to post $5,000 cash bail, or did he just sign off on a personal recognizance bond? But yeah, Darlene, there's Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald famously had, if we are to believe the stories, a running debate, and Hemingway would say, I think Hemingway was the one who said, the rich are very different from you and me. This is back when he was more along the lines of broke and a young artist in, say, Paris, etc. But yeah. Hey, Dave, I'm going to run along simply because we've got, we've had a couple of people ring in on the stress line. And I've got somebody on the Skype line, and we'll see what comes along. But listen, keep the brain trust going down there at Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium.
I will keep the Horn Family Community Congregation informed about our deliberations, Robin.
I do appreciate it.
We'll come up with a solution.
All right, you take care, David. Hey, give our best to Christine, would you?
I will. She's doing great.
Wonderful.
And she wanted me to tell you congratulations on the grandbaby.
Oh, thank you.
So I'll talk to you later.
All right. You be good, Dave. Later. Our buddy Dave from the blind. Dave in the blind. If you would like to jump in on the stress line, it is open now. And we will... We'll run over to the Skype line, and we're down to $716.50 to get fully funded. Another $116.50, and we're funded for we're funded up through yesterday. $116.50, that helps, you know, and then we'll see where we are with Friday on the front porch. Are you there, Scott?
Say hallelujah, come on, get happy. Robin.
Scott.
Next time Dave, the rave and the blind calls, I want you to ask him to do something for me.
Yes.
I want you to ask him, every time he calls for...
Hold on.
Get him to say, pluck your magic twanger, Froggy. Remember that, Andy Devine, the character actor with that sort of...
Well, yeah, but getting it... But... You know, you got to get in line because Brother Deacon Asa lives to hear Dave say, in a van down by the river.
Yeah, yeah. anyway, that's... And Dave may be onto something here. I can see the wooden cross up there, and you've got the Dear Sweet Merciful Jesus, in his loincloth with a knot on each side, keeping it on, you know. And you get, for a dime, you get three shots, and the object is to knock off each knot on either side. And the loincloth doesn't drop off because that's undignified for our merciful Lord. He drops into a dunk tank. And if you do that, you can pick your choice of any of the two lovely imported Chinese plush toys of famous Republicans, gun toters, and religious figures from the top two shelves. I mean, you make a lot of money with that, Robin. And
well, that could be a nice racket, Scott.
Or it could be the flashback kicking in from a trip I took in junior high or something. Hang on, wait a minute. Old Froggy got in my throat there, Ribbit. And that's what happened there. But, you know, do you know what happened on May 5th, 1961?
No, what?
Alan Shepard.
Alan Shepard, okay.
Did a suborbital flight in his Freedom 7 Mercury capsule. And just a day short of 3 weeks later, do you know what President Kennedy did?
What's that?
He told a group of people, we choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things.
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
They are hard.
Very hard.
Hard. So, I mean, the once upon a time, if you go back a couple of decades, five, six decades, seven decades, we used to do difficult things when we were presented with a challenge. And by God, we did it. I mean, unless you buy into the notion that the moon landing was faked, which I don't. But, you know, you would think, after the rapidly spinning NRA odometer of death and destruction has spun up an obscene, horrible number at this point, lately involving school children and innocent adults, you would think that that at last the gauntlet, well, not the gauntlet being thrown down, you know, the buckshot being blown into the ground down by your feet, we'd finally say enough of this shit. Kids, you know, let's make a national pledge. Let's choose to not go to the moon because we've been there, done that. But let's choose to put an end to this. There's got to be a way to do it. Other countries have done it. Some cities have given it a try anyway. I'm sick of it. I'm not the only one. I know you're sick of it. I know anybody with a heart and a soul and love in their gizzard is just fed up with it. And you hear the same fucking platitudes about, well, as American, we got the Second Amendment. And it gets to be like gnats. You ever get a gnat in your ear?
Oh, I've gotten gnats. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like same shit, different day. And when you've got little children who can't be identified by the usual means, and you tell which one this one is because of the pale green Converse or whatever on their little dead feet, then, God damn it, there's something wrong with that picture. There's something desperately wrong with that picture. And I don't think it's going to change, personally, because there's too much money in it, there's too much power in it. But I want for it to change, because we can't go on like this. It's like a couple in a dysfunctional relationship, the fucking battling Bickersons for 20 years, and both of them have known since almost the very start that it wasn't going to work, but society or religion or whomever, in-laws, said, well, you got to, it's tough, you got to stick together. And sooner or later, one of them takes something and hits the other one or shoots the other one, and there's more sadness of a different sort. Everybody who's honest knows that this shit's not working. There's got to be, if we're smart enough to plant a fucking flag and drink a glass of Tang on the fucking moon, And hell, that was over 50 years ago.
And that's also a big if now.
What do you mean?
If we're, yeah, that's the problem. It's the verb tense, Scott. We were smart enough. You said if we are smart enough.
Oh, we see you keep popping my balloon of optimism. And it was barely inflated to start with. But, and it's not really optimism, because really deep down, I don't know that anything's going to change, Robin. I just don't. I mean, I would like to think that it would, but shoot. I've been around long enough to know that. Well, I've been around long enough to know. I mean, come on. But do you get what I'm saying? I mean, I just, and tonight I plan to tune in to the big show, Must See TV. Hell, it's Thursday night. That's what we do on Thursdays, Must See TV. And clear this up for me. I don't mean to bogart the conversation. It's just me talking. But tonight and then Monday, but when are the other sessions? I can't find out that information, and somebody wants to know. Somebody who knows.
Oh, I had it last night. You should have asked last night.
Oh, shit. Day late and dollar short.
But tonight is prime time, but the others all start at like 10 a.m.
Well, that's all right. I'll set the alarm. No, wait a minute. The 10 a.m., what time would that be here? Oh, I'd still be up. That'd be 7 o'clock.
Still be up. Still be up.
You bet your sweet patooth. Come on. I'm a night person. It's cooler then. I can get stuff done. But, I would like to think that we can turn a corner, learn something, throw our cap over the high ivy-covered wall, and then go after it. You know, we used to do hard things. We used to do things that needed doing in this country. I don't know what happened to those days. Where's my time machine? Hand me the keys to my time machine, because I want to go back.
Yeah, but you don't, because think about what else was going on back then.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You are right. I.
What we need is a sort of a hybrid.
That runs on electricity and gasoline?
Well, or runs on social justice and prosperity.
Yeah, give me one, man. I'll test drive that fucker just for a week, just to see if I like it.
Exactly.
I'll take you for a ride. Where you want to go? Want to go down to the Sonic and get one of them conies? Jeez.
Well, Christopher up in Oregon just asked Deflategate Scott, who the fuck deflated Scott's never-ending optimism? Tom Brady? Fair enough.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
No, Arthur, I will not ask Scott that. We're trying to keep this program out of the gutter for at least 53 more minutes.
Whisper it in my good ear, Rob, and I can take it.
No.
Okay, well, email it to me.
Wait, okay, so it. Arthur said, ask Scott if there's a plush toy butt plug in honor of Ted Cruz.
They come in two sizes and two different colors, and I'll let you figure out which one is which.
I knew it wasn't going to end well.
And it never does. So, I don't know. I don't mean to bring the rest of the family down. But
well, no, let me do that for you.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
God damn it.
There's a union shop. I'm horning in on your section of the line. I better get my
1 hour ago.
Maryland, Western Maryland?
Yeah.
There you go. I thought I heard the
NRA roulette wheel of freedom and death. There was an outbreak of well-regulated militia activity in Washington County, Maryland. Three people were killed. One person was wounded. The gunman fled the scene before deputies arrived. How about that? An alert has been sent out to law enforcement agencies with a description of the shooter. It was a factory in Robinwood, Maryland. In Robinwood, Maryland.
Where's that near? Like Hagerstown, Frederick, Thurmont, somewhere up there?
It was the Columbia Machine Factory in Smithsburg. I'm sorry, the shooter was was spotted in Robinwood, Maryland. You know, oddly enough, yesterday in talking about the Brett Kavanaugh's, you know, terrified, yada, 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 I mentioned that, you know, Brett Kavanaugh is going to be more than happy to fuck America with gun laws when he, because, you know, the right wing's fears, you know what, they've all got bodyguards. They all got bodyguard protection. They don't want us to be able to protect ourselves. Well, it sucks when the shoe's on the other foot now, doesn't it? Because, you know, they're in the Maryland neighborhood where the house that nobody knows who paid for it is located, and the Kavanaugh family lives, and Brat walks in with his briefcase every evening and says, "Hi, honey, I'm home, let's boof."
Is that beer I smell, honey?
Is that beer cooking that I smell? Yum, yum.
I like beer.
Hey, kid, you want a beer? No, but I was talking about how Maryland has, you know, some gun laws, and that makes, you know, Brat all the more safe. And then we get a shooting in Maryland, so I guess that part of Maryland doesn't count. Subject line, getting things done. Matt in San Francisco just wrote and said, maybe if those kids in Uvalde had been inside Brett Kavanaugh's house, we could get reform.
Or an ice cold beer. Got to start them young, Robin.
Beer. I like beer.
Well, somebody look up where this Western Maryland thing took place, because I used to go through parts of Maryland and West Virginia.
The Columbia Machine Factory in Smithsburg, Maryland, about 10 miles east of Hagerstown.
Okay, all right. You pinpointed it then. Straight shot up 81. Is it 81?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
The factory makes molds and other concrete production equipment. And then for some reason or another, they closed that paragraph by saying the person who was wounded in the first shooting, was said to be in critical condition.
Do they have any ID or any notes?
Because there was a second shooting. The state troopers saw the gunman in Maryland, and they exchanged gunfire, and both were wounded. So the suspect is in custody and, quote, is no longer a threat to the community. The problem was, as a lawful gun owner, he was a threat to the community prior.
Yeah. And we don't know yet if he had any connection to the place where the second shooting took place. Or was that the first?
Route 66 near the factory has been closed. So much for getting your kicks on Route 66.
I think that's a different Route 66.
Meredith Medical Center is on lockdown due to a community emergency. So, but, you know, at least we're free.
Well, if by free you mean ducking behind the concrete abutments in our workplace when the shooting breaks out, I guess, yeah, that roughly constitutes free.
Well, thank God we've got well-regulated militias all over the country.
Gosh.
I know. I'm just a... Yeah. Well, hey, you'll get a kick out of this. Let's lighten the mood a little bit, shall we?
Is it champagne?
No.
Because, you know, mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all.
I get no kick from champagne.
You tell me, how can this be true? I get a kick out of sheep. No, that was wrong. Okay. How was it? Not bad.
Yeah, use.
All right.
Yeah, stop it.
Tell me what I'll get a kick out of. Fun again.
Introducing Republican congressional candidate Carl Paladino. He's a pig licking from New York, and
he's a font, isn't he?
Yeah, pardon?
He's a font, a computer.
Paladino.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I'll shut up. You tell me.
Well, Carl Paladino has been endorsed by Elise Stupidnik. who desperately wanted to, I mean, she turned into a desperate little maggot fangirl. Waxing philosophical, Carl Paladino said that, Hitler, quote, "The kind of leader we need today, we need somebody inspirational. We need somebody that is a doer."
And he ain't talking highways, I'll bet, autobahns or anything like that. He's talking doing
sometimes stuff. They just can't help themselves. You try to, it was our dear friend Haley in Arkansas who pointed out, I think yesterday, Godwin's law is dead.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It used to be that you kind of avoided the comparing anything with Nazis because you didn't want to violate Godwin's law.
It's kind of
hard to avoid that when they don't even give you the opportunity and they just tell you who they are from jump.
They were making funeral arrangements for Godwin's law right after the Tiki Torch march in Charlottesville, Robin. I mean, Hitler wasn't quite dead, or Godwin's wasn't quite dead, but he wasn't doing it all well.
He was coughing up blood on the porch.
Indeed. Yeah, and they wear it as a badge of honor. They don't give a shit at this point. Their viability and futures all hinge upon convincing enough mindless goobers and gooberettes.
Hey to goober.
Hey.
Hey, goobers, raisinets, chocolate-covered treats, I'm singing.
What was that one with the little white balls on the top of it? The non-perioles,
Snow caps, yes.
Jesus, I hated those things.
Oh, they're disgusting.
Oh, they were like sweet and they were semi-sweet chocolate, first of all. And God damn it, if I'm going to get chocolate, I want rich, creamy, sweet.
Yeah, but I don't want to. I'm okay with semi-sweet chocolate. It's just the frippery of those little those little BBs on the top.
Yeah, Jimmy's. That's what we call them in the trade, my friend. Jimmy's. J-I-M-M-I-E-S. Give me Jimmy's. Bring a box of Jimmy's. But no, I didn't like this.
Jesus, Scott, where does that shit come from?
Hey, listen, this is my old radio brain. You know the music. I know the trivia. We're the Gruesome Twosome mornings on KWFM.
It's Bob and Raylene on a Thursday evening.
Get Don in here. I want to see the pictures.
Yeah, where are those pictures I was supposed to see?
Hey, little dog snuggles. Get, where's Lady B? By God, we could revolutionize radio.
Save us, Lady B. You're our only hope. Hey, thanks to our buddy Texas T. We are now down to $701.50. We're $101.50 away from being fully funded up to, yesterday, which would be fantastic.
I say for the third and final time, send Texas T a year's supply of snow caps, courtesy of Head On Radio, Inc.
And a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
And turtle wax. Breakfast of champions. Yeah, I don't need to wax my turtle. Are you kidding me?
Hold on. I just want to know something. Yes. When they're feeling a little frisky at home in their little McMansion there near D.C., do you suppose Elaine Chao reaches for the turtle wax?
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
I'm sorry.
Well, I don't know, but if she does, that's when old Mitch really perks up.
Oh, it's the sound effect.
I'm coming, honey. Good God. Wait a minute. I got to wipe my eyes.
Lady B just sent me a meme. She said, I saw this online. Dylan Roof, caption says, heavily armed. Underneath it says, arrested. George Floyd, unarmed, murdered. Kyle Rittenhouse, heavily armed, arrested. Breonna Taylor, unarmed, murdered. And then white guy, heavily armed, arrested. Black guy, unarmed, murdered. The young man who they killed with ketamine out in Colorado, the violinist. The Aurora movie shooter, those eyes, no singing. Heavily armed, arrested. I mean, white guy. You know, I think we've got a name for that. That is the North Korea factor. Or the North Korea, Pakistan, you know. If you've got nuclear weapons, we're not going to touch you. If you don't, we will fuck you up.
Well, didn't they take Dylan? Was it Dylan Roof? They took.
Yeah, they took him to Burger King. Burger King, yes.
Yeah, he had it his way. I mean.
Now I don't know if this is true, but I hope it is. Every year, last year, Burger King, and this is a free product placement, no, uncompensated. But for Pride Month last year, my first Pride Month, Burger King sort of needled that Jesus chicken joint and said, and hey, you can get our big our Chick King sandwich on Sunday, too. And they gave a portion of the proceeds of every Chick King to LGBTQ organizations. Well, this year, they've introduced the Equality Whopper.
The Equality Whopper?
Yes.
What's on it?
It's a Whopper, like any other Whopper, except when it comes to the buns, it's either two tops or two bottoms.
Walked right into that.
Well, I think it's true.
I can't even... You've turned my brain now.
I got to go through the drive-thru now. Do y'all really have the Equality Whoppers?
You remember the Spidel Twist-A-Flex watch band?
Yes.
You have twisted my brain into a fucking Spidel Twist-A-Flex knot.
Well, at the risk of just taking this program where it has no business going, I'll be going for the two bottoms Whopper. Just leave it alone.
Not saying a word.
Just not into the two tops. It's just too much. All I can say is, Lady B replies, is follow the format clock. Weather on the tens, time and temp. Save your relatability for your friends. And it's pronounced W, not W. Oh, God, Lady B, I love you forever. W, not W.
WWDC, Washington.
WVNA, Tuscumbia, the little town with scum in the middle. They didn't like it when I said that.
Oh, well, I should say, I mean, memos from management. I knew some people who used to read the memos from management on the air with music.
That must have been delightful.
And now today's memo from management.
WNBC.
Yeah. Howard, WNBC. I watched that the other night.
But, I mean, that was something that was told to me all the way. Robin, it's not a W. It's a W. But the thing is, maybe one of the reasons they hired me was I said W right off the bat.
And there's no noise in Illinois. That's
nope.
Another one.
No cows in Moscow.
That's right. Jeez.
So, of course, little smartass that I was, okay, two state names, and this is something that just happens in the South, and we're just sort of taking the sting out of all the misery. But two state names that the South has a horrible problem with, and honest to God, I think it goes back to the Civil War. They just refuse. Okay, three. There is, of course, West Virginia, which everybody south of West Virginia, except maybe Kentucky, just calls Virginia. They think it's a region of Virginia. They don't recognize the fact that we seceded from a slave state so that we could be a free state. That's why our motto was Mountaineers are always free. But So there's that, you know, the neighbor, the neighbor lady. Every time my parents loaded us all up and brought us back up here when all the kids were going to the goddamn beach and coming up here to see the old folks. And I'm glad we did. Don't get me wrong. I learned so much, and I didn't even know I was learning. But she'd say, now, y'all have a lovely time in Virginia. And we'd get back, and she said, did y'all enjoy your trip to Virginia? And I don't know. She may have been so old that, you know, she predated us.
But yeah, well, yeah.
And God knows New Mexico puts up with this shit, too. The new just gets for, oh, y'all, Mexico? Do you speak American? But the two, no noise in Illinois. Illinois was one. So Southerners can't pronounce Illinois, and they can't pronounce Massachusetts. That CH there just plumb evades them. And it becomes, and I can't tell you how many times I heard this, Scott. Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Massachusetts. I don't even know how to spell that. I'm sorry, Kevin and Tracy and Carl. And Terry and Amherst, I'm sorry, but Southerners can't. They just can't. So anyway, I was a little smartass, and when they told me there was no noise in Illinois, I immediately began pronouncing it because I'd gone out with a girl who pronounced it that way. Illinois.
Oh.
Illinois.
I like that.
She was from a place called this was when I was going to college out in Missouri. She was from a place called Des Plaines in Illinois, but she called it Des Plaines, Illinois. She was a delightful soul. I loved her dearly.
Well, what about the state immediately south of the state of Washington? I got into an argument with a guy once about the proper way to pronounce the name of that state.
Yes?
How do you say it?
No, you first.
No, Oregon.
Oregon.
Well, a lot of people want to say gone, Oregon.
Oregon, yeah. Well, that's the Missouri thing.
Oh, never say Missouri if you're in the show me state. Never. I once made that mistake.
Oh, no, but there's parts of that state where you do say Missouri.
No, it's Missouri.
No. When you get down toward the boot, I mean, I knew people. Missouri.
Well, the boot heel doesn't really count now, does it? Isn't that where Rush Limbaugh was from? Oh,
that's damn near Arkansas.
How are them pineapples holding out? Because we got more.
Oh, there's more coming. But I said there was a setup there. I said, oh, yeah, down there, that's practically Arkansas.
Arkansas. Wasn't he a singer?
No, that's R. Kelly. That's R. Kelly.
I'm sorry, I don't get out much.
By the way, speaking of Elaine Chao, Matt in San Francisco says, we all know Elaine dresses in a skin-tight black leather dominatrix outfit with a Bible in her left hand and a whip in her right. She towers in her stiletto heels over a kneeling Mitch who's clad only in a diaper. She smacks him and asks, who's my bitch, Mitch? I am, mother. I am, he squeals. I am, mother. I am, he squeals. Okay.
Drops her lucky strike butt right on his non-hairy chest and grinds it out with those stiletto heels.
Well, just don't turn me over on my back because I'll never get up again.
Yeah, well, that too.
Hey, Scott, follow the format clock, weather on the tens, time and temp, and save your relatability for your friends.
And, or as was the case in my career.
I'm running out to the tattoo joint and getting that on my forehead tomorrow. Save your relatability for your friends.
Shut up and play a record. The hotline.
Quit doing the weather over the intros.
Oh, man. I've lost the thread to this conversation.
There never was one. It came unraveled the minute I said hi, Scott.
Maybe I need to hang up and ice myself down for the big show tonight. So Will anything come of this? I guess that was my prime question that I wanted to pose to the Horn family and to you. No.
The great state debate has entered another phase. Hold on.
Oh, dearest.
Lady B says, we say Nevada. They say Nevada.
And there's a town.
And there's Colorado and Colorado, and I was told never to say Colorado. And Lady B says, and I'll be dead in the cold, cold ground before I recognize Missouri. I'm pretty sure Harry Truman said Missouri.
Well, he probably did, but he also dropped two bombs. So, I mean, what does that tell you about the guy?
Yeah.
And
Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Yeah, and liked his bourbon and ranch, you know? I mean, and hats. Why don't men wear hats anymore, damn it?
Men wearing hats died at the 1960 inauguration. You should know that.
No, JFK wore that top hat because he doffed it to his daddy. Propped up in a chair in the reviewing stand, old Joe Kennedy.
Don't spend too much in West Virginia. I'm buying you a victory, not a landslide.
God, those were the days when West Virginia, I almost called it Virginia. Those were the days when West Virginia was a reliably Democratic state.
It wasn't that reliable in 1960.
Well, but, yeah, okay, I get that. Because
The fellas had to show up in the parking lot with cases of pints of Four Roses in the trunk, and by God, you only got one pint.
Yeah, but you had your Roman Catholic candidate who talked funny, wanting to be the nominee and the eventual president. So, yeah, I understand that. But for a long time, you go into any home, you'd find a picture of Jesus and Franklin Roosevelt, and who was the third?
John L. Lewis,
with them fucking eyebrows, man. Didn't they have waxing back in those days?
Well, you know, that was part of the reason I transitioned, because I realized I was beginning to get John L. Lewis eyebrows, and you'll do anything not to have those.
That's all it took.
Well, no, but it was a convenient reminder of why I wanted to. Has to do, oddly enough, has to do with the conversion of testosterone into dihydrotestosterone, which is something that happens later in a man's life. Testosterone does the things we expect testosterone to do, but eventually it starts converting testosterone, your body starts converting testosterone into dihydrotestosterone, and that's the shit that makes the hair fall out of your head and grow out of your ears and your eyebrows and your nose.
I've noticed,
and it's
that,
also really, really hard on the heart.
Oh my dear!
And when I say hard on the heart, I don't mean hard on in a good way, because those kind of disappear too.
I remember those.
Oh Jesus! This program.
Well, you brought it up with your show platform, mate, and I see when you use those technical chemical. I think of Shell with Platformate and the car riding through the...
The filters in a Territon are charcoal activated.
You know, I used to smoke those things.
That
was the last cigarette I smoked, Robin.
When I was a kid, I took them apart because I wanted to see the activated charcoal goddamn filter.
Yeah, and it was a regular filter paper folded up in a certain way and permeated with little activated charcoal granules, while Lark cigarettes, remember Lark? Have a Lark today? Okay. There was no paper. It was just the filter, the regular filter, and then the center chamber had the, you could open, and my dad used to smoke Larks. Hey, you've been fucking around my Larks, tearing up the filter. I was an inquisitive kid, Robin. What can I tell you?
Okay, this is how bad it got. I mean, you know, I smoked for a very long time, and I was a curious smoker. Light beer came out, and then light cigarettes came out. I think I've got it right.
Yeah, you're right.
And when Marlboro Lights, this is me, and it kind of validates some of the complaints about Joe Camel. Because I was just interested. You know, people who are into different, they're called foodies. I was a smoky. And I tried all kinds of different cigarettes. I remember something called Twist lemon menthol cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
And then there were Moors.
Remember Moors, yeah.
And they were like, you know, as long as my young forearm back then. And when Marlboro Lights first came out, they had a little plastic band around the filter and the tiny little perforations in the paper.
I don't remember the plastic band, but I remember
that. Well, it didn't last long.
Well, that's why I don't remember it.
And I remember when Winston Lights had white filters, and then they went to the artificial cork-colored filter, mm-hmm. and it was not as good as it. Oh, shut. Yeah, I'm gonna. There's gonna have to be a content warning on Podbean because I'm talking about smoking.
Remember L&M's 101s, a silly millimeter longer.
Yep.
I don't remember where I keep my keys, Robin, but I sure as hell can remember cigarette jingles.
Yep. Now, see, I don't remember cigarette jingles.
You can take Salem out of the country, but
you can't take the country out of Salem.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I'd walk a mile for
a camel. Lucky Strike has gone to war. My parents told me about that one. Lucky Strikes came in a green package prior to World War II, but the government needed the green dye, so they changed the packaging to white and used the slogan "Lucky Strike has gone to war."
I'm not sure if that's true or not. I think that was a promotional thing.
Well, it probably was. There were a lot of lies.
LSMFT, Lucky Strike.
Means fine tobacco.
Exactly. God damn, reach for a Lucky instead of a Sweet. Now I want a cigarette, Robin. Give me bum one from you. Give me one of yours.
Yeah, I'm fresh out. Let me go. Let me go down and ask one of the boys under the bridge. They might have one of those floor sweeping ones.
Jesus.
Do you know what a pack of cigarettes goes for around here now?
Probably $8 a pack.
Now this is West Virginia, okay? I mean, this is a smoking state. I've had people come here and say, "This is the smokingest state," and we may be the smokingest state still in the union. And they're approaching $8 a pack now.
Well, that's cheap compared to out here. I haven't priced them lately, but I'll tell you, even 15 years ago, when I first moved out here, almost 20 years ago, I couldn't believe it. You know?
Yeah.
$6.50 a pack? Now, your generic cigarettes and your sub-brands or whatever.
Floor sweepings.
Yeah, it's poor shit and sawdust. Only there's not a lot of sawdust in those cigarettes. But, I mean, even the generics were pricey back then, and maybe still are.
Lady B says Marlboro Lights, Camel Lights, and Capris for me. They were so cute, and the Capris were so cute and skinny. Ebony Magazine and Jet Magazine advertised more cigarettes like crazy. Then it went to Menthol Newports. Menthol Newports killing African Americans for years and still counting. All the black folks I knew were always Newport some, but originally it was Cools. Subject line: smoking. Matt in San Francisco says, "I feel like I'm at a Smokers Anonymous meeting." Yeah, but I'm no longer powerless over tobacco, and my life is no longer unmanageable. And I cannot tell you how happy. I mean, I look back and it blows my mind. It's just a matter of motivation.
What is that Al Pacino movie with Russell Crowe about the CBS 60 Minutes thing and the and the topic was the tobacco.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
What was the name of that fucking movie?
That's one for the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department.
Well, I'll tell you, since we are on the topic of smoking, if you ever want to read the definitive book on the tobacco industry, Robert N. Proctor, P-R-O-C-T-O-R, book came out about 10, 12 years ago, Golden Holocaust. It will shock and amaze you and outrage you of how the various forces in this country conspired together, and I don't think conspired is too strong a word, to get us hooked and keep us hooked and avoid any and all responsibility for the damage done by their product if used according to manufacturers and label instructions. And God damn them. I mean, I was smart enough to quit when it mattered. But I may not be out of the woods, Robin. And this is the funny thing. Even though you've quit, if you were a smoker for any length of time, as I was, like 25 years, thereabouts, you're never fully out of the
woods. No, you're not. You're not. I was a 43-year smoker. And
now, when did you start? Grade school?
14.
Wow.
Quit at 57. Oddly enough, I quit because I wanted to live. But the motivation was when they looked at me and said, we will be happy to provide you with your estrogen therapy, but not as long as you're a smoker.
Yeah, I get that. I remember when you were talking about that.
And suddenly, I'd been wanting to quit for years. But suddenly, it mattered. I think with my closeted existence, I really didn't care if I was committing slow suicide.
I can see that. I mean, I would. That makes. Well, and see, you quit for a positive, self-affirming reason. All it took for me were the sudden chest pains, and the EKG on the treadmill, and I said enough of this.
Oh, I had that too. Didn't matter.
August
kept going.
6th, August 9th of 99, I said, that's it. I am done with these fuckers. And
September 15th, 2020. Quit the cigarettes and took the first dose of estrogen on the same day.
But then I took up drinking, Roman, and that opened up a different can of beer.
Well, I don't know how you were drinking and not smoking.
And I like beer.
Well, you should visit Brett's house. He likes it too.
That was, you're right. That is a tricky thing because for the longest time, coffee in the morning was.
Oh, God.
Because, and I'm sure the Horn family is just, they're flipping through the channels on TV to see what else is on. Mabel or what? But yeah, I mean, and I'm sure that our audience is smart enough not to have any members that still smoke cigarettes. I hope that this is the case. But for those of you who are not, we won't preach at you, but we will say, come on.
Well, yeah, you can do it. It can be done. I absolutely.
If you can do it and I can do it, then anybody can do it.
Oh, by the way, going back to Massachusetts, Tracy up in Massachusetts says, Massachusetts, commonly fucked up. Just call us massholes. It works. I thought massholes were a specific subspecies of Massachusettsians.
No, actually, they come from New Hampshire.
and Kevin and Tracy are apparently enjoying the program. Samsonite luggage, remember that. And then Winston tastes good, like
as
a cigarette should.
As it should, grammatically, it should be as. Right.
Yeah, but that wasn't how they did it.
Oh, I know.
And we used to, when we would visit up here, we would always stop in Kentucky, and my father would buy a carton of Winston's and a carton of Salem's for my granny. Because she lived alone, and she kept her cigarettes hidden from her adult daughters because they would give her hell. Mother, are you smoking? And my dad would get up here and look at the and look at his sisters and say, leave our mother alone. She is a full-grown adult. She has a right to do as she pleases. And if smoking is that, then let her have the pleasure that, but it's going to kill her. She lived into her 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it wasn't like she was lighting one off. She just liked a cigarette every now and then.
Well, see, that's the proper way to smoke. The way they jacked up the nicotine there toward the end, the last few decades when smoking was still somewhat fashionable and respectable, they would do anything to keep people going on those things. They'd make them burn faster. They'd fuck around with the nicotine chemistry. And
oh, yeah.
To heighten the impact.
I mean, we probably really do sound like a Smokers Anonymous meeting, but the fact of the matter is, what we're talking about here, when we're talking about the marketing of tobacco, there's a hell of a lot of overlap with the marketing of fucking AR-15s.
And some forms of politics, specifically. It's the merchants of death is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way the car companies used to be before Ralph Nader wrote Unsafe at Any Speed. They didn't care how many fucking windshields people were thrown through or roll over or crumple zones. Don't give me that shit. You know, fins. I mean, I'm old enough to remember untatted windshields. And Signal 30. Everybody of a certain age remembers the Driver's Ed film, Signal 30.
Oh, my God, is that the one with the... Yes, they showed it to us.
Yeah. And they really truly are merchants of death.
And Signal 30 did not work because it was... has there ever been a more poorly produced educational film? And I sat through a lot of bad ones.
I believe it was filmed in Ohio, if memory serves.
Well, it was terrible, though. Not just for the gore and everything, but it was the reefer madness of bad driving.
Yeah, it is. It did have that that sense.
I mean, it had everything but a bow chicka wow wow, soundtrack.
And everything was done with such solemnity and earnestness.
Oh, I remember them showing us an anti-drug movie in high school called Go Ask Alice.
Oh no, I vaguely
and it,
remember.
It featured the Jefferson Airplane song, and it introduced me to the album Surrealistic Pillow, because I had to run right out and find where that cool song came from. And it was about this girl named Alice who did LSD and horrible, and then just ruined her and everything. And meanwhile, everybody in that classroom has just been out back behind the field house sparking up a number, and we're sitting there watching it and giggling. Now, and every time the soundtrack comes on with, Go Ask Alice, we're like, grooving on it.
Yeah. Was Blue Boy in it? Remember the Dragnet episode with Blue Boy?
Oh, Jesus God, yeah. By the way, Lady B is one with our zeitgeist this evening.
Yeah.
Subject line, Donald Fagen. And she knows this is one of my favorite albums. On the cover of his album Nightfly, the smooth jazz musician with his cigarette and his ashtray. And, of course, the line in the song, I got plenty of Java and Chesterfield Kings, but I feel like crying. And anybody who's ever worked a midnight shift all alone and been... Yeah. Eddie Van Halen died of lung cancer. Clapton tucked his in the neck of his Fender Stratocaster. Let's see. Keith Richards, I don't know if he still smokes, but back in the day, he'd have that little bit of guitar string sticking off of the machine head, and he'd put his, and he got it from some bluesman, I'm sure, but he'd poke his burning cigarette filter down onto the E string or and it would just sort of bob along there as he played. Yeah, knocked the ash off along the way, too, when he was rocking. Coffee and cigarettes got you through a night shift. It also made you look cool. But then again, we smoked weed in the production room. Did you have the same production room we did, Lady B? Jingles at McDonald's. We do it all for you. Burger King, any way you want it, that's the way you'll get it. All you have to do is let us serve it your way. Jesus, 70s jingles. I'd like to buy the world a Coke. You know, we lost the under 50 audience about an hour ago, Scott.
Well, kids, what can I tell you about kids?
And of course, here in West Virginia, and you don't see them anymore, but they were back in the day. Poor broke-ass farmers would agree to let the tobacco company paint a mail pouch ad on their barns.
Yep.
Well, just to get the barn painted.
There was a time, I had two uncles who worked for airlines, one for Eastern and one for United. They were mechanics, and they would come up, they were both living in Miami, and they would come up and bring the family for visits from time to time, and would leave a handful, a bag full of, the airlines would give you a pack of cigarettes, but was a conventional pack with
no. It was like the little three cigarette or five cigarettes flat pack. Yeah,
that's. I think the first cigarette I ever smoked was one of those airline cigarettes. You know,
my earliest flights were still smoking flights, and I, you know, took advantage of it. Had no business smoking, but. Jeremy in Vermont says, it's always been fun when traveling for a vacation or such, usually in New England, and someone would ask where we were from, and we'd say Vermont, and they'd reply one of three things. One, it's a beautiful place, or two, what part of Canada is that, or three, what state is that in? I never heard that about Vermont. New Hampshire? Where's the old Hampshire? Huh. Across the pond. Right. And Lady B, Jude says, Hafiz on friendship. This thought just came by to visit from Hafiz. It offers a comfort from elsewhere, a place of respite before the storm. Be well. Hafiz writing, this is the kind of friend you are without making me realize my soul's anguished history. You slip into my house at night, and while I'm sleeping, you silently carry off all my suffering and sordid past in your beautiful hands. That's gorgeous. Thank you. Thank you, Jude. And Lady B, correcting herself, says, I'm sorry. It was hold the pickles, hold the lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us serve it your way. I was not going to correct that because I knew that wasn't quite right, but I didn't quite have the words at hand because I was working on the fly here. But then again, I'm going to save my relatability for my friends.
You're going to... I want a photo of that tattoo. Because that's that makes for a good tattoo, I think, or would make.
Yeah.
Save your relatability for your friends.
Isn't that just beautiful?
That is.
I mean, you can hear that coming out of the mouths of program directors all across the country. They probably taught them that in program director school.
They went to school?
I like to think there was some sort of secret program director university, because how else could so many people be such identical dickheads?
And not be in Congress.
In either use of the word Congress. They were in Congress, just not capital C Congress. Well, I see by the old clock on the wall that we're probably going to wrap things up now, Scott, because I got to have a couple of minutes to reorient everything so that I can watch the must-see TV.
Alrighty, Robin.
I gotta refill the bougie bottle with ice and water, and so that I can hydrate as we go, because there will probably be sweating and screaming.
Well, remember, I'll leave you with the words of the late great Casey Kasem. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the scars. Stars.
And get Don on the phone.
Yeah, does anybody? What are those photographs?
It's where are those pictures? And I finally figured that out. He referred to movies as pictures. He got to see the advances.
No, it was pictures of Snuggles the dog.
No, I don't think so. I think you're hearing it a different way. Get Don on the phone. Where are those pictures I was supposed to see? Because he's just pissed off about everything. He's not getting his... Because, you know, rank hath its privileges. He's not seeing the early releases of the movies that he's supposed to be seeing. And everything has just gone sideways that day.
I think you're right. And finally he snapped. And how many times have I have to come out of a goddamn...
Up tempo record with into a goddamn death dedication.
It's down there.
Get this is such pathetic inside baseball. We're so far out in the weeds.
Well, post the next time you get a chance, post. It's on YouTube.
Oh yeah, sure it is. Yeah.
And it's if you're not in radio, it's funny to see somebody lose it that way. I mean, and he's, you know that
that and not, that and the audio of Buddy Rich losing it on his band in the bus during intermission.
On the band bus. All right. Well, I can see Buddy Old.
Tom and Sonny San Rafael. We can't leave this untouched. Jingles, wasted brain cells, two all beef patty special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
Yeah,
that was the
Big Mac.
Yes.
But I don't.
And the Big Mac was what character in McDonaldland?
You faded out there.
I said the Big Mac was what character in McDonaldland?
Well, it wasn't Mayor McCheese.
No, Mayor McCheese was a cheeseburger.
And who was the one that the snaggler, not the villain, was?
The Hamburglar.
Hamburglar. God damn, you're taking me back to McDonald's land. What's wrong with you? I don't know.
Wasn't the Big Mac the chief of police?
It might have been.
Because he had all the lettuce, I guess.
We're going to give you a Happy Meal for that.
Yeah, Randy Radar says, I want to go back to the mid-1970s, this time with money.
Yeah, there you go, and buy some fucking Apple stock. I wish I'd have hung on to my Apple stock.
I kind of want an apple with peanut butter, after all. Never mind.
Oh, stop it. You're just...
I promised Brother Deacon Ace I'd be out by 8, so I got to go, Scott. Later.
All right, Robin. Good night. Good night, Norm, people.
Bye now. See, this is, you know, especially in the context of where we are getting, what we're getting ready to watch, this just worked out nicely. A little light, you know, a little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants. So we are at $701.50 to go. God, if we can knock that down by $10, and Grimace was Barney's grandfather. Yes. Thank you, Lady B. But it would be nice not to have a $1,000 fundraising goal tomorrow. We did some good work this evening. Thank you. Thank you all. Because I mean it. Some critical shit going down. And if in a couple of days the program ain't here, well, sorry. But we can hopefully take care of some of this. Officer Big Mac. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you. So it's damn near go time. Thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, now a union shop. Please stay safe. Get your second booster. Getting mine on Friday. Got the all clear. The antibiotics apparently worked. Yay. Wear your mask in crowded spaces. COVID's all over the place, all over again. They warned me about that today at the doctor's office. It ain't over. I'm sure Paul from Parts Unknown knows that. We do, too. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, keep your social distance, and by all means, if some idiot comes towards you, a congressional candidate from New York, saying, you know what? We need a leader like Hitler. Well, avoid that maggot like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.